Take a trip with us to learn about some of your neighbors with this edition of KXCR Conversations. These are neighbors just like you and me, and how their lives are filled with history. KXCR Conversations with you.
Welcome to KXCR Conversations. I'm Jerry Schneider.
And I am Karen Hazelwood. And thank you for joining us today. Today on KXCR Conversations, we catch up with Etienne Guerra and Yuen Kim, lead violinists and founding members of Delirium Musicum, a Los Angeles-based self-conducted chamber orchestra on an extraordinary journey in a red VW van. Etienne and Yuen, welcome to KXCR Conversations, and welcome to Florence on this windy, rainy time.
So, hello, everyone. Thanks for having us.
We came at the time.
So tell us what your travels are all about. Like, why are you on the road?
As you know, we're in the middle of the pandemic, and I'm saying middle because it doesn't look like it's even close to an end yet. But all our concerts, all our tours, our recordings that we're supposed to do in last September got canceled or postponed because of the pandemic. So as a chamber orchestra based in Los Angeles, we were like, okay, what do? We still need to bring some music because music is also reflecting society, is part of the society, is necessary for people, even more so when everything is as hard and challenging as it can be these days. So we had a few ideas at the beginning. Of course, we did like everyone, like some streaming, some videos that we put together with everyone playing from their own home, and then we would mix it together. And then very quick, we realized that was not enough. We need to do something that is really about the human bonding, that is directly helping people who are self-isolated. The first idea that we had and that we put in action was called courtyard concerts. So the courtyard concerts were concerts that we played in the middle of the apartment buildings that we had in Los Angeles, where people could listen from the balcony and at safe distance. So it was all good for everyone. And you had families, entire families on the balcony listening, or older people by themselves. And it was this really magical energy happening where we could play a real concert with real people, but surrounded by our audience, and everybody was safe. And it was so meaningful, and people were so moved that we thought, okay, we need to bring that to the world, you know, not only to our microcosm where we live. And that's how Music Caravan was born, as a 2.0 version of the courtyard concerts.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it was really beautiful. I really encourage people, maybe we can play a little bit of that later in the show, to watch children sitting there. Like, I felt great just watching these kids, you know, like, how is it affecting them? They're going to always remember that in their lives. Mm-hmm. It was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, that's wonderful. So how did you two meet?
Oh, well, that's a long story. But to make it short, we both came to Los Angeles as violin students about 7-8 years ago to study at USC with a very famous, wonderful violinist, performer. Her name is Midori Goto. And so we ended up having the same violin teacher. And her studio, what we call her violin class, was only 8 students. So it's a very small family-like kind of relationship with our kind of mentor or master teaching us. And we ended up of being neighbors. So she was living right across my small street.
Nice.
And, you know, one leading to the other, we were biking home together and so on. And then what happened? What did
Something
you do?
Happened.
Yeah, you messed up at some point. And we
and here you are.
Yeah, here we are. Yeah. I never imagined being on the road like this with the French in my life.
That's the beauty of life. You just never know what's happening next.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's it. Yeah. And if you're flexible, you adapt, then you live the most wonderful and crazy things.
We loved learning you are a self conducted orchestra. Mm-hmm. Tell us, what this means and how it differs from actually having a conductor.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's, Delirium Musicum is really a crazy bunch of young musicians, completely untamed, extremely talented. Actually, I think during this pandemic, what I miss the most is being with them, surrounded by them, rehearse, performing with them, because it's such an energy. And this energy comes from, I'm the artistic director of this ensemble, and so I get to say also how we want to pick the musicians and what identity that Delirium Musicum can bring to the audiences. And very often the musicians that we have in the group are musicians who don't quite fit in what they are supposed to fit in the classical musical formatted world. And they are still very good musicians. They win competitions, international competitions. They come from the best schools, but there's always something that they are missing, artistically speaking, that holds them back from just yet entering big, great orchestras or starting a teaching career in great universities, because they are still searching, they are still developing their artistry with very strong musical and artistic identities. And that's where I think the Delirium Musicum attracts them like a magnet.
Interesting. So could you call it a stepping stone?
Yes, I think it's really like an artistic research and a self-revelation of what they have to say and share with the world as artists and musicians.
Yeah.
And because they have that profoundly ingrained in them, they need to have an outlet to speak of their own version of how they see life and art. And I think the Delirium Musicum, because it's such a small ensemble, right? It's about 15-ish musicians. It goes from 13 to 21, depending on repertoire. And there's no conductor, so everybody's responsible pretty much on the same level. I'm leading from the violin because you need some kind of leadership in rehearsal to not have a complete chaos. But it's really right. Everyone is important. Mm-hmm. If one person doesn't have exactly the same color of sound, the same articulation, the same vibrato, the same phrasing approach, is immediately noticeable. So it's very important to be absolutely in sync. It's almost like a string quartet, you know, like in chamber music. It's really, we say that when you play string quartet, you see more your colleagues than your own family. Because you spend so much time rehearsing and touring together that you're closer to your colleagues almost, you know?
Sure.
Right. So it basically, once the train leaves the station, everybody's got to be on board.
Yeah. So I try to give, you know, like a musical direction, and so we know where we are going, and then everybody's contributing with their own identity and personality to go from where we are to where we want to be. But the journey of it can be very different from one concert to the other, from one repertoire to the other, because everybody reacts differently and everybody has its own input.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So rather, like in big orchestras, when you audition, what is customary is a big orchestra, and that's how it needs to be done, will pick the musician that will fit their own identity. With Delirium Musicum, we reverse that. We take people who have already their own identity and can bring that kind of maybe little rough diamond, that gem, into the group to inspire everyone and splash their genius creativity with everyone. So it's they all challenge me in a positive way. And that's the energy that really inspires, I think, all of us, and that bonds us together. I always think about us like a family of puppies, you know, from the same mother. You know, they all play like and have a great time. It's extremely cute to watch. And then everybody met. And it's the same relationship we try to create with the audiences, where it's really about the human bonding and the sensorial experience, all-inclusive experience, rather than just a musical enjoyment.
Yes. One of the things that I see when I'm watching you, because it's as much the music and the music is coming through your bodies, and you're all expressing yourselves through your bodies. And I think there's such a freedom in that versus sitting in an orchestra where you're sitting straight and everybody kind of looks the same. And, you know, your expression has to come through your music, of course, but music doesn't just stay with your instrument. I mean, it courses through your body. And so I love that you're dancing with your instruments.
Yeah.
And you're,
because we're much freer, right, when we're standing, and the body language is much more obvious. So since we don't have a conductor, we have to read off each other's body language, right?
Right.
It can be like an eye contact, can be just your pinky moving in a certain way. And because we know each other so well, we know how to react to that thing. But it's really like a visceral experience of untamed musicians getting together and having this incredible energy burst.
It's really amazing to watch. So,
of live performance.
Yeah, and that's what's so wonderful, you know, is that you are literally, even though you guys are working together, this is an experience for your audience as well. You know, like you've invited everybody in to feel and witness what's going on and become a part of it.
Yeah, it's not only a musical offering, it's really a moment of sharing and,
yes,
and bonding. Yeah. And we get from the audience as much as we give. It's really a both way journey.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
As it should be.
So how did your Delirium Musicum become a reality for you? Like what happened? Did you have an epiphany one night, or what happened?
It was almost a mistake.
Those are the best ones.
Yeah, happy mistake.
Best mistake I've ever done. I was always interested in this kind of chamber ensemble, self-conducted. It's very much based on the model of European Baroque orchestras. Same amount of musicians, one leading violinist. But I was already the artistic director of another chamber orchestra in Los Angeles, with a complicated relationship with the producer of that orchestra. And as we parted ways, the last concert that we played with the musicians with that orchestra was so amazing. Like something really crystallized, something happened that was unique and never happened to me before. That when I stopped working with the other orchestra, I was like, suddenly, wait, but that concert was something that we cannot just leave there. And so we started talking with the musicians, and then we decided that, okay, we didn't agree. We could not really express artistically what we wanted with a previous producing entity. So we will do our own thing. And it really happened pretty much overnight, absolutely not thought through. 4 days later, we were filing for incorporation. We got our nonprofit status probably like 2 months later, which is record fast.
Yes.
And we were concertizing within weeks.
Wow.
And that was beginning of January. And by June, we already had a half season played with the first concert in February. So everything happened so fast and unexpectedly that I cannot even tell you how we started, because it just happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like a star exploded, you know, and we had this burst of light, and then we just rode the energy flow that came out of it without realizing what we were
Perfect.
Doing. Not even a year later, we had a call from a very good management in San Francisco asking us if we'd be interested in signing with them. And we were not even thinking about management at that point. It was just too soon. And so we ended up signing with the management. Few months later, we were in touch with Warner Classics, which was, you know, one of the biggest, greatest record label today. The idea was that we were going to record our debut album last September. Well, the pandemic came, but it's just postponed. So hopefully we can do that in 2021. And things are just coming to us, and we were set to tour nationally, internationally this fall. Well, all has been canceled now, but we're barely 3 years old, and things got almost out of hand in terms of like what we can do and the demand and the great projects we can put together. And that's really absolutely fantastic and phenomenal. And I just cannot believe it's even hard, you know, to process all that and then just get the work done, you know, yes. Of like, we don't have 15 employees who can organize tours, you know, it's almost overwhelming, beautifully though.
The process of creation is kind of like you just have to, when it comes and you feel it in your gut and you know it's right and you have to go with it, you have to kind of relinquish and fear, you know, you just have to let go of it and trust in that the mystery of it and just watch as it unfolds. And that's what you guys are doing. And I really applaud you for that, because not everybody will do that. People want to know what's next, what's going to happen. You know, like I need to have something firm and solid, and life isn't firm and solid. So, you know, I really commend you both for your fearlessness and your love and your, and allowing, you know, your creative juices to just come forth.
Yeah, you do have to take that leap of faith. And that's exactly what you've done to setting something in motion.
It's almost like a blind trust in each other and a blind trust in future, that when we are together, only good things can happen. And I think that's a very strong leading power that we feel.
One of your advisory board members is Antonio Damasio from the USC Brain and Creativity Institute. That's fascinating to me. Yeah. What's your relationship with him, and how has knowing him informed your work? Has there been this, this is all part of what you're doing. So how does he come into this?
He's a wonderful friend. And we could say he's my guardian angel in Los Angeles, Italy, because I met him almost immediately after arriving to Los Angeles, within a year, almost randomly, because I had this project, a CD recording, my solo debut CD recording. And I was speaking with the sound engineer about where to record. And it happened that Antonio Damasio is the head of the Brain and Creativity Institute at USC. And the institute has a concert hall, and a very good sounding concert hall. And so we ended up recording in the BCI, the Brain and Creativity Institute. And that's how I met him, because I asked him if we could record. And then the next email was, yes, of course, and let's meet. So it was an immediate generosity and opening doors. And since then, it's been a great friendship. I did all my crazy creative projects. I do at least one per year. They were premiered in the BCI's venue, each of them. And he commissioned also pieces. I did a project around Miles Davis, because BCI had one of the trumpets and of the paintings that Miles Davis painted. And he wanted to do a year around him. And I had a carte blanche to create something, which was very funny, because I don't play jazz. I love jazz, but I'm, you know, by no means would say that I can play anything that resembles jazz. And I four times before to say yes, because I was telling him I'm not the right person to do that. But then, yeah, some kind of epiphany came, and I got the right musicians to accompany me in that journey. And it was an absolutely wonderful human experience with three other jazz and pop musicians.
And wasn't that also with the flamenco dancers? And was that part of it as well?
Is that something different? Was with a flamenco guitar and electric guitar. It was called the Sunset Club Trio, and we're playing the violin repertoire and replacing the piano parts most of the time with the two guitars. And that would create an absolutely fantastic sound when it's paired with the right repertoire, like the blues, you know, from Ravel's violin and piano sonata, Bartok Romanian dances, all these pieces that really fit almost that kind of Grappelli, Django Reinhardt sound. Uh-huh. And we need our and stuff. That was absolutely wonderful. And of course, the Lirio Musicum is playing at least once a year at the BCI, if not two. So he's been an amazing support and an amazing brain also to talk to. I just love our conversations, very inspiring. And yeah, I ended up being the artist in residence of the Brain and Creativity Institute.
That's amazing. That's great.
You have obviously other influences. You enjoy jazz. You don't necessarily play jazz. Any other types of music that influence
anything,
you?
Anything, really. Anything, not only music. Any type of art, including culinary arts, is very, very influential. Of course, I'm very influenced by French chanson and by Hungarian folk and gypsy music because I'm half Hungarian. My father is Hungarian. We half French, half Hungarian, and half American for a year and a half now. You do the math. It's all
three halves. You're three halves. I'm not a math major, but even I know that's not right.
That's okay. I think that we're all a little bit of everything, even, you know, with genetics. I don't trust it. So.
Yeah. So do you, I mean, do you have like a secret desire to play rock and roll?
Don't we all have?
God, that would be great.
Yeah, a little air.
If you get a chance guitar, to listen to Delirium Musicum live, in a live setting, then you'll see that it's pretty much rock and roll.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I was going to say that there's a group called Apocalyptica. I don't know if you're familiar with them. And, you know, they play Metallica a lot with their cellos. And I could see you guys not doing Metallica necessarily, but I think pretty much music has violins, strings in it across the board, you know, whatever kind of rock music it is, from rock to alternative to punk rock, there's violins in it. So you probably could have your pick.
Yeah, and you know, we play also some pieces by Yanis Xenakis, which is a Greek-French composer of the 20th century, who was a great competitor of Boulez. And to me, it's more psychedelic than any rock that has been performed ever. It's completely mind-blowing. I encourage you to check it out, yeah.
Hmm. Yes.
Yeah, in the 70s, 80s and 90s, my uncle, Sid Sharp, who was a concertmaster with the LA Phil and a violinist, and he had a production company. And during that time, they were strings used on a lot of rock and roll shows, a lot of rock and roll tunes. They did a lot of backup and things that way. So yeah, I know that it definitely
there. That's
cool. Yeah. I never got any of that, by the way. But
I don't know. You're pretty talented, Jerry.
It skipped a generation.
Don't sell yourself short. So I wanted to ask you, Yuen, you have a YouTube audio that hit 3 million views, inspired by, was it the Chopin project? Was that it, or?
Mm-hmm. If I correct it, it's over 7 million now.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh. 7 million.
Something happened to that video. It was just recorded for a competition many, many years ago. I had to just send the tape to competition. So that's why I recorded it. And then at that time, YouTube was used to send the links to, you know, like at either competition or the like concert hall, whatever. So I just posted it, and all of a sudden, after a year or something like that, suddenly, I got a lot of views.
Thank you.
but I think the reason Chopin is a very loved composer by people, a lot of people, but there is no such any piece written for violin. So yeah.
until Music Caravan came.
Etienne and Yuen, co-founders of Delirium Musicum, will be back next week for part two of this show. I'm Jerry Schneider. On behalf of Karen Hazelwood, thanks for joining us on this edition of KXCR Conversations.
This has been KXCR Conversations with you, a regular feature here at KXCR. Having a conversation is easy. Call 997-5252. Email info@kxcr.net. Or visit us at the station across from the library. Our combined history makes our community. We all have the energy and power to do good things. Organizing and energizing ourselves is a great step in conversation. This is Community Radio, KXCR, Florence, 90.7.